This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance Network, and today is Friday, December 18th, 2020. This is episode 121 of the Conscious Resistance Lab. This is my weekly podcast where I broadcast uncensored news covering things that you won't normally hear in the mainstream, as well as dissecting mainstream propaganda. And of course, we always have a heavy emphasis on solutions, and that's what we're going to bring to you tonight. I'm actually broadcasting in Houston, Texas. I'm still in Houston, leaving early tomorrow, about 8 hours from now, hitting the road, headed back to Mexico. We'll be driving for 2 days, 16 hours. So wanted to do this episode tonight because it's really important. And there's a lot of things going on in the world that we want to cover. So I'll just give you a preview of what we're going to get into. Today's episode is titled The Conscious Resistance Live 121, Vaccine Side Effects, Cyber Pandemic, The Nygaard Arrest, and Colonization. So if that makes any sense to you, well, then I hope you'll stay tuned. And even if it doesn't, then I hope you'll stay tuned and be informed, because we're going to be talking about the latest side effects from the COVID vaccine. We're going to be talking about these reports of a cyber attack against the United States that's already being blamed on Russia, even despite evidence, and what that means for the future. We're also going to be discussing the arrest of Peter Nygaard and Jean-Luc Brunel. Some of you might have heard about that. These are Epstein's associates, as well as, you know, what is Peter Nygaard's kind of seen as the Canadian Epstein. And then we'll talking about this idea of what it means to be colonized and what decolonization means. And I'm going to share a little bit of my perspective as a person, an indigenous person who was not raised on the reservation or who does not have direct connection or traditions from my indigenous past, and help you all understand how no matter what color you are, no matter what part of the planet you're from, we are all indigenous in one form or another. So I invite you to stay tuned with me for the next hour. We're going to cover very important information that, as you, I said, you won't hear in many other places, not even in some of the alternative media. So I invite you to stay tuned. First, though, I want to invite you to bookmark theconsciousresistance.com. This is my website right here, theconsciousresistance.com. It is an open source network. We have about 4 different contributors who contribute podcasts, essays, interviews. We have books that you can download for free, some copies of my earlier books. You can watch our documentaries for free. You can follow us on Float, where we're actually live right now. You can follow us on Minds. You can follow us on Hive. You can join our textlets, so you get updates directly to your phone whenever I put out new videos and articles. You can also, and I highly recommend, signing up for our Telegram channel, because I'm much more active on Telegram than I am anywhere else. You can also follow us on BitChute and Library. And of course, right now we are live on DLive and live on Float. Shout out to everybody who's watching on Float. I know most of you watch through Facebook, but I want to invite you guys to visit DLive.tv/conscious resistance. Let me see if I can go ahead and just post that in the comments for you guys. DLive.tv/conscious resistance. Go over there and stop giving YouTube or Facebook and YouTube and all of them your data, your time, your energy, etc., and watch on DLive. And if you're interested in the stories we're going to cover tonight, this is where they will be found on this post on the website, TCR Live 121. And without further ado, let's go ahead and start diving into these stories. I will be sharing your comments throughout the night. I appreciate everybody who is tuned in. I'm doing the show a little bit later than usual. It's 10 o'clock here in Houston, but I hope you'll stay with me. So let's go ahead and get right into it. Should we start? I think we probably should start with a couple of little sound bites on the latest in the fight to rid the world of pedophiles, I guess we could say, to rid the world of these sick, twisted people that are operating in many ways in plain sight and under the cover of law. Because as I've revealed here, for those of you who followed for a long time, and if you followed my work and you've seen my documentary on the Finders cult, well, then you know that the US government, the CIA, and other intelligence agencies have been covering up pedophile rings. This is not QAnon nonsense. This is factual stuff. The Finders cult and others that I am and other researchers have uncovered, that the CIA and the Foreign Counterintelligence Agency both covered up for sex trafficking, child trafficking networks in the past. And that Jeffrey Epstein is just not some lone wolf random guy. He's a part of a larger network that is connected to both U.S. and Israeli intelligence. You know, whether you want to believe it or not, the facts are there, and the mainstream ignores it. But just a little update on that whole saga. It says, this one's coming from courthousenews.com. Feds scoff at bail plea by indicted Epstein lieutenant Ghislaine Maxwell. It's funny they call her a lieutenant. The U.S. government considers Jeffrey Epstein's globe-trotting ex-girlfriend far too big of a flight risk to allow bail as she awaits trial on sex trafficking charges, prosecutors said to a judge on Friday. British national 58-year-old Maxwell has been in solitary confinement since her July arrest at her 156-acre property in Bradford, New Hampshire. That is, of course, if you believe that she's actually been arrested. We should point out, and I think we have to, in the interest of fairness and truth, point out that we actually have no evidence. We haven't seen a single picture of her. We haven't seen a mugshot, you know, any kind of anything you would expect from a traditional situation where somebody is claimed to have been indicted or held in lockup. We don't have that, but you know, according to what we're being told, she's in prison awaiting trial, charged in New York Southern District with six counts related to Epstein's decades-long predation. Maxwell is said to both have helped groom young girls for Epstein and to have occasionally participated in forced sex acts. The court on Monday made public a brief filed by Maxwell. She's basically saying that they're willing to put up $28 million if they let her out of solitary confinement and out of the prison and let her be confined to her home. And it says, in a 36-page memo, acting U.S. Attorney Audrey Strauss asked the court to deny the bail, saying it's essentially the same as the denied motion that she submitted over the summer. And yeah, so as it stands, the court is not letting her out. We're still awaiting to, you know, hear when things are actually going to start. When there will be a full-on trial against her, we'll just have to wait to see. I wouldn't hold my breath too long, but yeah, just to give you an update on that. And again, we have no picture. That's why they're using this old picture, this stock picture from the year 2000. There's no picture in 2020 showing her in prison, but you know, if you want to trust them. But onto some news that we can prove. This is a story that I wrote the other day for The Last American Vagabond about Peter Nygaard, who is the man to the left. And now I've seen some people say this picture right here might be photoshopped. We've got a pretty good source that this picture is indeed true. But if somebody has evidence that it's photoshopped, then please let us know. But either way, Peter Nygaard, for those who aren't aware of him, he is just like Epstein in a way, except for he's from Canada. He's connected to Robert De Niro, to a lot of powerful and well-known people. He's also considered to be a fashion mogul, you know, in the big in the fashion world. And as I write in this article, which is titled Peter Nygaard, Jeffrey Epstein, and the Fashion to Sexual Assault Pipeline, I write in here that people like Peter Nygaard and, of course, Jeffrey Epstein, who, for those who have followed my work or maybe seen some other folks' work, Jeffrey Epstein's main financier was Les Wexner, who is also the head of the Limited Brands. And Limited Brands owns Victoria's Secret. Victoria's Secret has their annual fashion show. You have just this web of connections to fashion, to modeling. This is one of the ways that they recruit these young girls. And I've known female friends throughout my life, some who were models at different points in their younger age. And they definitely say, you know, that there's drugs and older men around these younger 14, 15, 16-year-old girls sometimes who are trying to just get into modeling. And this is what we've seen and heard from the Epstein cases, that several women were recruited. And then, of course, for those who are not in denial about the fact that Trump is also connected to Epstein and Trump has been friends with Ghislaine Maxwell, et cetera, forever, you also have to remember that Trump was also the head of the Miss Universe fashion shows, as well as other kind of connections to the fashion world. So this article, though, is about the fact that earlier this week on Monday, Canadian fashion magnate and accused sex trafficker Peter Nygaard was arrested after years of allegations. So he was arrested by Canadian authorities and he's facing extradition into the U.S. on sex trafficking and racketeering charges. And basically, as with Epstein, people have accused him of rape and trafficking for decades, and it's finally caught up to him. According to the affidavit, evidence gathered in the U.S. includes interviews of more than two dozen people. The victims show that Nygaard's criminal conduct has affected hundreds of victims. The harm to his victims has included not only economic and psychological harm, but also numerous instances of non-consensual sex, including non-consensual group sex, attempted forcible rapes, and drugging of victims. So since the early 2000s, at least, he has been accused of doing these kinds of things. And he actually does have another kind of private island in the Bahamas, similar to Jeffrey Epstein. It's called Nygaard Key. And let me see if this picture will open up right here. Here, let's go ahead and open this picture. I want you guys to see this guy built this like crazy. There's like, it's supposed to be simulating kind of like you can't see that picture that well. Simulating kind of like Mayan pyramid. It looks like kind of like a jungle little paradise, but this is his place. And they used to apparently have pamper parties, is what they call them, inviting these young models there. And 57 women are now accusing Nygaard of using violence, intimidation, and his vast resources to entice victims and cover up actions. Now, so far as I've seen, and I'm still digging, and I would love any more information for anybody who has information, that I haven't seen any clear connections between Nygaard and intelligence agencies like we have with Jeffrey Epstein. But either way, this is a powerful man. He's well known by a lot of celebrities and a lot of powerful people. And this is interesting because this was reported in a newspaper in Finland saying that an article about sex parties at Nygaard's mansion featured a short interview with actress Jessica Alba, where she said she had to leave a party at the mansion because she was so uncomfortable with what was taking place. She mentioned the presence of young girls at the party as well. Nygaard sued the parent company of the paper, which was called Alma Media, for slander in Los Angeles, but he actually lost the case because, you know, he couldn't prove that they were lying. Jessica Alba said what she witnessed. So that was 2005. 15 years ago, people were warning about this, and apparently nobody listens until now. So one of the things that I talk about here is just the similarities between Nygaard and Epstein, and there's many of them. I don't want to read my whole article to you. I'd recommend you guys go visit The Last American Vagabond and read this article. But there's a few things that are worth noting. For one, it seems Nygaard did know Prince Andrew, just like Jeffrey Epstein. And think about it. We know that Prince Charles was connected to Jimmy Savile in the UK, who is a well-known pedophile. And then Prince Andrew is friends with Epstein and Peter Nygaard. I mean, it just so happens the Queen's sons are connected to pedophiles that are trafficking women. No coincidence. But also, apparently, Nygaard was obsessed with slowing down the aging process and stem cell research, very similar to Epstein, who was apparently invested and interested in like trying to seed the world with his sperm and interested in eugenics of various kinds. And one of his former girlfriends, Instagram model Sue Ellen Medeiros, she said in her 2014 memoir that he had encouraged her to get pregnant and have an abortion. So, quote, we could use those embryonic cells and have a life supply for all of us, you, your mother, and me. And the Instagram model says that she declined the proposition. She's actually being accused as part of the lawsuit and named as a co-conspirator and helping recruit some women as well. So we don't know that she's a totally innocent victim. But this last part just focuses on, again, the fashion to sexual assault pipeline. The fact that so many of these different people have been connected to the fashion world. And it's important to expose this. It's not going away, guys. These people do exist. This is real life. And until we deal with it, it's going to keep happening. Just another piece to that puzzle. Modeling agent, again, Jean-Luc Brunel is a French dude who is friends with Epstein, has some Israeli connections, and has been accused of raping models since 1988 at least. He was just arrested yesterday as he was preparing to board a plane in France. And some of the Epstein victims have accused Jean-Luc Brunel of providing like 12-year-old girls to Epstein, that Brunel was, through his modeling agency, bringing young girls to Epstein. So he's facing now, Jean-Luc Brunel is facing charges including rape, sexual assault of a minor, and trafficking of minors, according to the prosecutor's office in Paris. So, I mean, it's crazy. Shit's going down, and it's good. You know, I know some people say, yeah, this is Trump. See, he's still fighting the deep state before he leaves office. I don't buy that, of course, but I really don't give a shit. All I know is that these women that have suffered, and maybe even young boys, because sometimes it's important to acknowledge that young boys get abused too. One of the Epstein victims saying that his arrest, Jean-Luc Brunel's arrest, brought tears to her eyes. The point is that the victims need to be heard, and the terrible, terrible people who are perpetrating these crimes need to be brought to justice. That's all I really care about. You know, at the end of the day, that's where I stand on this whole matter. And yes, as Michelle said, these people are definitely vampires. So, and it is an elephant in the room. It is an elephant in the room that many Americans, and not just Americans, because as I said, this happened in the UK, Australia, this has also happened in Australia, other places as well. It's not just powerful people in the intelligence agencies and the government. You've got people in Hollywood, of course. We know Kevin Spacey and others. And again, coincidence, excuse me, Kevin Spacey is friends with Epstein or knew Epstein in some way. It's Hollywood, Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, so many others. And then, of course, Corey Feldman and others, young childhood actors talking about the rape and the molestation that's happening in Hollywood. You've got, of course, politicians from the Franklin scandal in the 80s, we know, from the Callboy scandal during the George Bush White House in the early 90s, to the Finders cult scandal in the late 1980s as well, all through the politics. And then, of course, so many religions, Catholic religion, South Baptist in Texas, Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm not saying, of course, every single person that believes in these traditions or religions is a child molester, excuse me, or is a pedophile. I'm simply saying that these people have infected every area of our lives. And the thing is, these pedophiles, these psychopaths, they weave themselves into positions of power. And they often, I mean, there's a massive lawsuit going on right now with the Boy Scouts, right? Accusing tens and thousands of scout leaders of being involved in not only molesting boys, but covering it up. And then I've covered in recent videos for those who've been following that there's a case against the Vatican, you know, accusing that in the Vatican themselves, in the Pope's backyard, people were being raped and blackmailed as young boys. So, I mean, this is not just random events that are going on. You know, and it's so crazy. I'll just share that I have a friend who's somewhat of a normie, but he kind of knows things. He knows that Epstein's real and the Finders are real because he's seen some of my work. But when somebody says things like the world is run by pedophiles, or that pedophiles are in power and they're controlling things, that's so outlandish and so crazy to him. And I don't understand how it can be, because it's like, are you paying attention? Because if you're paying attention, if you look around, you see that, as I just kind of went through, high positions of religion, high positions of media, which is influence, is propaganda, high positions of government, high positions of intelligence agencies, the schools. I mean, at some point, you got to acknowledge that there's a problem. It's not just a coincidence that all these things are going on. All right, guys. So we're going to now switch gears and get into the COVID updates, right? I mean, we've got stuff to talk about today with the vaccines. I've got a couple of updates on the PCR test. Things are getting, as I've seen the video of the nurse fainting. We're going to talk about that. I know you guys have probably seen some of these videos going on. I don't know about you, but to me, some of these videos seem so fake. Like, I'm looking at them and like, did they actually get that vaccine? Because maybe I'm just silly, maybe I'm just paranoid, but some of these videos that I've been seeing don't actually look like people are getting these vaccines they're claiming, but we're going to talk all about that. Well, let's start off, though, first by reminding you guys that my name is Derek Brose, and you're watching The Conscious Resistance Live, episode number 121. You can always find my work at theconsciousresistance.com. We're live on Facebook, we're live on DLive, and we're live on Float. You can find my work on Spotify, you can find my work on Audible, you can find it on Google Podcasts and all the other different places. Just search The Conscious Resistance, my name, and you will find it. So let's dive into the PCR test, guys. Thank you for being here with me tonight. Oh, this link doesn't want to open for me. I just wrote this. There you go. I just wrote this article recently. This is from The Last American Vagabond about a week or two ago. I'm not going to dive super deep into it because I covered it already, but the Florida Department of Health quietly requires labs to report cycle threshold of the troubled PCR test. There it is. Jam it up your nose. And that's the process for the PCR test, or the technique. You know, it's more of a process than a test, but for the sake of convenience, we call it a test. But this is something I've covered and written about in several articles and different videos. And I actually have a new mini documentary coming out on Monday called The PCR Deception that you guys are going to want to share. If you saw my Darkest Winter mini documentary, it's me partnering with the same editor. And we're about to do some really awesome work. We're going to release this just in time for Christmas for you guys to expose the truth to your family about how the faulty PCR test is part of the problem of increasing these cases, and then making people think that it's the end of the world and everybody's about to die. Now, that's no disrespect to anybody who's been sick or anybody who has died. I'm just saying a lot of what we're hearing and the policies are based on this test. So we've been working hard to expose this test recently. Again, I'll invite you guys to visit The Last American Vagabond to check out my author page here to get caught up on my articles about the PCR test. What you need to know at the moment, though, is that myself and plenty of other people have shown and have asked some different authorities. I've asked the Houston mayor and the Houston Health Authority about the PCR test and the potential for false positives, which is known in the scientific community. This is not like, oh, we, the activists, figured this out or discovered this. No, this has been known. So the mainstream is either choosing to ignore it or whatever. But the fact is, the PCR test can produce false positives. This has been documented in a number of different cases. It's really related to this cycle threshold. If they do too many cycles, then they can detect dead virus, or they can simply just find something that they might believe is, oh, look, we found COVID. And so there have been various health professionals and scientists warning about how they're running this cycle threshold. And as reported by Off Guardian, I noticed this the other day, so I'm hoping more of you guys saw this, the World Health Organization finally admits that the PCR test creates false positives. Warning concerning high, this is the cycle threshold value of tests, are months too late. So why are they appearing now? And this comes on a December 14th memo released by the World Health Organization that warned that a high cycle threshold, what I was just talking about, will result in false positives. So why is this, if this information is accurate, it has also been available for months. So why, we must ask, why is the World Health Organization just repeating it now? And then the other thing you have to ask, okay, if some just, you know, random internet researcher like myself, self-taught journalist, can figure this out, can interview experts, can do the research and conclude this months ago back in the summer, I can go ask the mayor and the health authority and they can admit, yeah, there are problems with the test, but they keep telling people to get tested. The World Health Organization keeps telling people to get tested. None of the media reports about this. We have to ask that. Why? Why would they keep this information about this gold standard test, the PCR polymerase chain reaction is what it's called. And this new World Health Organization memo states that using a high cycle threshold value to test for the presence of SARS-CoV-2 will result in false positive results. This is the World Health Organization's own words. So just in case this video gets banned on Facebook or anywhere else, remember, this is the World Health Organization. Users of the RT-PCR reagents should read the IFU carefully to determine if manual adjustment of the PCR positivity threshold is necessary to account for any background noise which may lead to a specimen with a high cycle threshold value result being interpreted as a positive result. They go on to explain, the design principle of the RT-PCR means that for patients with high levels of circulating virus or viral load, relatively few cycles will be needed to detect the virus, and so the CT value will be low. And this is what I was talking about before, the cycle threshold value. So if they are doing 20, I've seen some experts say it should be in the range of 20 to 24, 25 range for it to be accurate. But some cities are apparently running these cycles as high as 40. And so, as they said a moment ago, this is going to lead to a value result being interpreted as a positive result. And so they're saying relatively few cycles should be needed to detect a virus. So the cycle threshold should be low, because if you're infected, if you've got this virus in your body, they shouldn't have to cycle it up to 40, whatever cycles in order to find it. And this is, again, the World Health Organization, quote, in some circumstances, the distinction between background noise and actual presence of the target virus is difficult to ascertain. So they're admitting, like, yeah, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the virus and background noise, between false positives. That's on the World Health Organization website. This is coming from offguardian.org. I'll post this link. And, of course, all the links are going to be posted at theconsciousresistance.com. But I just want to get this one out here, because, I mean, the PCR is such an essential part of this puzzle that we need to continue to expose. Like I mentioned, I have a new mini documentary coming out. I'm hoping that my mini documentary can play a role, that many of you who see it will share it out there to your family and friends and say, look, all I'm saying is please learn more about this PCR test. If you're going to be afraid, if you're going to, you know, because when I hear somebody say, oh, you know, so-and-so got COVID, which I've heard a few times since I've been out here in Houston, I say, well, did they get sick or did they get tested positive? And sometimes people are like, yeah, this person said they felt sick, they were having some breathing trouble. Or, you know, I had friends who said they got COVID or what they believed to be COVID and that it was rough. You know, they had some breathing trouble, they felt sore all over, but generally they got better. I had one friend say, but I don't feel like I'm the same. And that's the facts, right? I'm not going to deny their experience. But there are other people who are told they have COVID and then they're forced to quarantine, they're forced to stay home from work, or, you know, maybe quit their jobs or delay their vacations when really they had a positive test with no symptoms. And that doesn't mean that they have COVID, because this could be a false positive. And that's important to understand in this whole puzzle. Now, a couple other related items here. This is the story I was talking about. I don't know if you guys caught this one. This was in El Paso, which is in Texas, over by the west side of Texas, over by the border. It says, update, Questions raised over vaccine injection at the UMC event. UMC says nurse received second shot to eliminate doubt over vaccination. So let me just kind of fill you in on this, because this is a really weird story that, to me, I don't know. I'm going to shut up. You guys decide what you think. This one says, some of our viewers raised questions about video that KTSM 9 News showed from Tuesday's COVID-19 vaccine injections at the University Medical Center of El Paso, specifically the second vaccine that was then administered. So in our video, you can see one of the healthcare workers with his sleeve rolled up, but when it comes time for the injection, it appears that the person administering the shot doesn't push down on the plunger. The plunger looks like it's already depressed. Huh. And then they say, some eagle-eyed news viewers wondered if the worker received the vaccine at all. I'm even surprised they're kind of saying this, even though they're sort of doing it in like a just curious, oh, did he get it? The KTSM reached out to the University Medical Center, and on Tuesday, a spokesman maintained that all five healthcare workers were given full doses of the vaccine, and the hospital agreed to take a closer look at our video. So the hospital responded that the nurse whose shot was questioned has received a second dose of the vaccine to eliminate any doubts that he was vaccinated. So look, let me just pause here, because the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine and most of the ones that are going to be rolled out, they do require two separate doses. We've been talking about this for months. Some of them are 10 days apart. Some of them are 3 weeks apart, but that's supposed to be spaced out. And I'm assuming that's so your body doesn't get overwhelmed by being injected with things. So in this situation, you have a nurse at the University Medical Center in El Paso that appeared to get a vaccine on camera, but when you watched it, it looked like that guy definitely didn't get the vaccine. So then they claim, well, we're going to bring him back in front of the camera and give him another vaccine just to make sure that you guys believe it. Like, that doesn't sound very scientific or medically safe to me. But here's what the University Medical Center in El Paso said. Quote, after numerous reports emerged on social media claiming one of the five nurses receiving a vaccination did not receive a full dose, we want to remove any doubt raised that he was not fully vaccinated and further strengthen confidence in the vaccination process. The nurse in question today was vaccinated again. UMC has confirmed with the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices that revaccinating the nurse will not cause adverse effects. The nurse will need to return after 3 weeks to receive his second dose. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And I'm just going to, let me see how long this clip is. I want to play this short clip for you guys real quick, if y'all don't mind. So let me reshare this screen. And once again, this is the Conscious Resistance Live. I'm going to go ahead and share the link to the Off-Guardian PCR test article about false positives. I recommend sharing that. So let's go ahead and look at this. I want you guys to see this video here and tell me, does this look like homeboy got a second shot? Does it something seem up to you? I don't want to make up my mind for you. Your mind for you. I want you to think about this. So check this out.
Close to video, have raised questions about video we showed from Tuesday's UMC event, specifically the second vaccine that was administered. And we do have some close to video you'll only see on 9 this morning. Apologies to those who are squeamish when it comes to needles. You can see the UMC healthcare worker with his sleeve rolled up. But when it comes time for the injection, look at the top of the syringe. It appears the person administering the shot does not really push down on the plunger. It actually looks like the plunger is already depressed. Our viewers wondering whether the worker received the vaccine at all. Now, for comparison, let's take a look at one of the other injections administered just moments later to a woman. You can see this, the plunger is clearly pushed down all the way. And when we show them to you side by side, you might notice the difference. KTSM reached out to UMC for a comment. The spokesperson maintains all five healthcare workers were given full doses of the vaccine, but the hospital is taking a closer look at our video.
All right, what do you guys think? I mean, it didn't look like he got it the first time, right? And maybe he did the second time, but I mean, come on. Like, what if none of the viewers had even said that? What would that mean? I mean, would that mean they're just basically going to not give him the shot? Now, so that's one shady thing. And then today, Vice President Mike Pence got his shot on camera. And I watched that one. I'm not a doctor, but it looked weird to me as well, the way they administered the shot. I don't know. And I've seen other people saying that they're looking at some of these celebrity, you know, on camera shots that It looks like just water, saline solution. I wouldn't be surprised, guys, and I don't trust any of these people. I'm not going to sit here and claim as a journalist, as a researcher, that I have the documents to prove this, but you know, my bullshit sense is going off. So whatever that's worth, I think some of you guys are feeling the same. And then the other thing is that people like Bill Gates are saying they're going to get it. I think Biden's talking about getting it live on camera on Monday. And this propaganda for the vaccines is going to continue. And it, I don't know. You guys got to be very aware and astute, because they're going to keep pushing this stuff hard. Now, here's another example. Again, you guys saw the video of the nurse fainting after. If you haven't, let me see if this includes it. This is just a fact check that I wanted to show you guys, though. So this woman, let's see if this is a clip. This woman gets the vaccine, and let me see, 2:17. Okay, so we're going to watch the video in just a second. This woman, who's a nurse, she was at, I think it was in Tennessee, Tiffany Dover, nurse manager for the Catholic Health Initiative Memorial Hospital in Chattanooga, Tennessee. She fainted after receiving the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine, as was seen on this video that we're going to show you in a second. And after recovering, she told the local news channel, "It just hit me all of a sudden. I could feel it coming on. I felt a little disoriented, but I feel fine now, and the pain in my arm is gone." Dover said that, now here's the kicker, she has a medical condition where she often faints when she feels pain, and that's what they're claiming is. Oh, so this has nothing to do with the vaccine. A spokeswoman for the Memorial Center confirmed to Reuters that the nurse was quickly recovered. The CDC acknowledges on its website that it is not uncommon for people to faint after vaccinations. It says, although there is no definitive answer as to why this occurs, scientists think that fainting is due to the vaccination process and not to the vaccines themselves. Okay, well, you know, that you got to make up your own mind and decide for yourself. But all I'm saying is that all of this stuff is not making me feel better. You know, the more and more we're hearing, like, hey, if you have, you know, pregnant women shouldn't take it. If you have a history of allergic reactions, you probably shouldn't take it. Of course, there was the alleged false positives of HIV in Australia. So Australia decided to scrap one of their vaccine trials. There's been reports of spinal injuries. I mean, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm trying to just be aware of the information, and you guys make your own decisions, make your own mind up. But at the end of the day, guys, I mean, this is pretty scary stuff to consider when we see everything that's going on. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be a fear monger. I don't want to be anything of that sort. But I want you guys to understand what's happening and to see this. So here's a video where you can see this nurse is talking about how great the vaccine is after she got it. And right here, you're going to see her just kind of collapse while she's talking. And the doctors come to her aid, and here she goes, and ready, collapse. And I mean, I'm sorry, that sucks that got caught on camera, but that's what happened. And I'm not saying it is the Moderna vaccine or anything. There she is, she's alive afterwards. She said she's fine, said she has a condition. Maybe that's true, but at the same time, guys, I'm not calling this woman a liar, but I wouldn't put it past these people to come to this woman who is a nurse and say, hey, you know, you fainted live on camera, and these crazy anti-vaxxers are going to try to use this to convince people that the vaccine is bad. So we need to put out a statement, and let's just say that you have a condition that you faint often, and you know, and it, so it doesn't even have to be that she's a part of the master plan. If anything, she's probably a nurse who believes in these things and maybe doesn't make the connection that this could possibly be related to the vaccine. And instead, just, I'm just doing my job. That's one possibility. The other possibility is it's true that she does have a fainting thing, and she faints periodically from pain. Maybe she has a history of fainting after getting vaccines or getting shots in the past. I don't know. All I know is that's what happened. And it's just interesting that this fact check, they're like, fact check, nurse fainting after COVID vaccine, not evidence of potential mass genocide. Well, that's reassuring. And I guess that's because, of course, people are saying all kinds of things on the internet. And I think it's just interesting that they're even having to fact check that. We'll get into that in just a second. I have this one here in case you haven't seen this one. Just another piece of COVID news. Coronavirus vaccine can be made mandatory. Brazil's Supreme Court rules. This is not good for Brazilian people. Even though the Brazilian president, Jair Bolsonaro, has basically been against the COVID vaccine and has very much, just like Mexico's president AMLO, has very much been for personal choice and saying that they shouldn't be authoritarian. The Supreme Court just said that they can mandate vaccines. So the Brazil Supreme Court says coronavirus vaccines can be made mandatory, delivering a blow to the nation's nascent anti-vaccine movement. However, the court also says Brazilians may not be vaccinated against their will. So here's the thing. They can mandate it, but they can't literally hold you down. A court statement says Thursday's ruling does pave the way for state and municipal governments to approve laws imposing fines or restrictive measures for anyone refusing to take a vaccine. So just like we've been seeing, and I keep telling you guys, what's your plan? What's your plan? There's so many different, I'm going to show you a couple more articles real briefly in a second. There's so many different examples of these people making it clear, guys, that they're coming for you and your job, and they're going to try to like shut you out of polite everyday society if you don't comply. So there won't be a gun to your head per se. There won't be, you know, men with jack boots, at least not yet, coming and beating down your door, but they are going to make it extremely difficult for you to continue to thrive and survive and live the life that you want without submitting. I mean, this is just a fact of the matter. So this ruling from the Brazilian court is basically saying that, saying, okay, you can mandate vaccines. They can be mandatory, but you can't literally hold people down. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has repeatedly said he will not take the vaccine and opposes mandatory immunization. He has talked about side effects as well. Brazil's health regulator has yet to approve any shot for mass immunization. But the point is, now the Supreme Court has paved the way. And that is scary, guys. That is really scary. So if you think it won't happen, let me just give you a couple more examples. Here's this one, just the last 2 days. Employers can bar unvaccinated employees from the workplace, according to the EOC, which is the federal government's Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, said on Wednesday that companies have the legal right to mandate that employees get the shot. And more specifically, employers are entitled and required to ensure a safe workplace, which an individual shall not pose a direct threat to the health or safety of individuals. This means a company can require its workplace to be vaccinated. So, you know, it says that ordering employees to get a COVID-19 shot would not violate the Americans with Disabilities Act. So this is coming from the federal government itself under the Trump administration. But it doesn't really matter about Trump, because whether he's there or not, it's the federal government. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is making it clear to business owners and to employers they can keep employees from being able to work if they do not get the vaccine. So you've got a Brazilian Supreme Court saying they can fine people, they can mandate it, they can do things like that. In America, you've got the federal government saying that. And then this one, Canada introduces their own national compensation program for vaccine injuries, just in time for the COVID rollout. And this is, of course, similar to the Vaccine Injury Compensation Court in the United States. But, you know, we'll see if it actually has any effect or if it, because the thing, at the end of the day, it's all coming from taxpayer dollars. Just like in the U.S., the Canadian companies, they're indemnified. They can't be sued if you're injured from these vaccines. So it's all coming from the taxpayer, which is, I think, just another, you know, just another way to screw the people over. So it says people who are vaccinated to protect themselves against COVID-19 and experience an adverse event after the immunization will be eligible for compensation, the federal government says. The announcement of the no-fault program, get that? No fault. It's not the vaccine manufacturer's fault. It's a no-fault program. So nobody's going to admit fault, but we'll give you some money. Health Canada says it approves the vaccines after its thorough review of scientific evidence shows that the benefits outweigh the risks. And Health Minister Patty Hajdu in Canada said, quote, Canadians can have confidence in the rigor of the vaccine approval systems. However, in the rare event that a person experiences an adverse reaction, this program will help ensure that they get the support they need. Oh, well, I mean, they're all but admitting, yeah, that maybe, and I look, statistically, if we believe their numbers, and I don't even know if I do trust the numbers from U.S. government or the Canadian government about how many people are injured, I would say there's probably more people who have been vaccine injured. And even if they have the ironclad proof, the governments won't admit it. But even if we take what they say and that it's a completely rare event, that these adverse reactions rarely happen, and it's a million and one, as like Peter Hotez and others like to say, I just think that's totally disrespectful to that one in a million family that has a child that now has to deal with a painful situation or has to spend their life detoxing from metals and all the toxins inside the vaccines just to recover, to be, you know, able to live a normal life. So, I mean, you consider and be like, yeah, no big deal. It's only one out of a million. But let me tell you this, guys, if your family member is that one in a million, you're going to care. You're going to care about that. You're not going to be like, oh, well, it's just one in a million. Yeah. So you can be like, it's one in a million, but it still sucks for that family and the people who have to deal with that. One last thing I want to mention about COVID real quick, why I see this, and then we're going to get to our final topic of the night, which is colonization and decolonization. And this is something that I'm really excited to share with you guys. So I hope you guys will stay tuned. We were at this. We got probably 20 to 25 minutes left. If you want to hang with me, I appreciate it. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance Network, episode 121. Just another warning, my friends. The United Nations Health Agency is warning that tough months lie ahead in the pandemic. And this is, I mean, it's getting worse, guys. They're really kind of amping up their propaganda. And I mean, you don't have to trust the United Nations, because I don't really trust the United Nations and I don't really trust the World Health Organization. But it's important also to remember that oftentimes the reason that they are putting that information out, you could say it's to warn the people, but it's sometimes, I believe it's also because the predator class likes to broadcast their plans and they want the people to be somewhat warned. Like, hey, we kind of told you guys ahead of time before it happened. We warned you that there was food shortages coming up. Yeah, we told you it was because of COVID. We didn't tell you it's because we're purposely wrecking the economy as part of the Great Reset so that we can recreate the world into one technocratic world order where you have no power, no privacy, no freedom. But we did warn you. So even if we don't trust the, you know, almighty United Nations, we should definitely be very wary of when they put out these kind of statements. And it says that they're warning that these next few months, again, this is that dark winter, they're warning that there's going to be very difficult times ahead. We've heard that there's going to be food shortages in Texas. The food banks are expecting food shortages in the next couple months. And right here it says, with the Northern Hemisphere entering winter, there are deep concerns that the worst months yet are ahead. The past week set a new record for deaths with 80,000. I don't even like reading their statistics because, again, I don't trust them. But they're saying the vaccines are beginning to get rolled out, and that is the hope that they will end the pandemic. However, it will take months for a sizable number of people to get vaccinated, and the vast majority will remain at risk. Vaccine is on its way. It is a great source of hope, says this guy from the World Health Organization. And just kind of side note, that's also the same guy that months ago said that they were going to have to go into people's homes and remove infected people. So I don't trust that guy. But he says, quote, it's a very, very high intense period. And it really does come back to being able to implement all of the measures that are needed. And he said the spread of the virus will likely intensify in places that haven't gotten under control. And he basically is saying, like, I know people are tired. He said countries and individuals must endure the hardships that come with fighting the virus, such as obeying restrictions on gathering and taking precautions against infection. There is no magic to this. There are no unicorns here. He acknowledged that it's extremely hard for people and governments to keep up a fight that has completely overturned the normal functioning of society. So I'm just saying it's not fear mongering. It's just letting you know what they, the predator class, these people who are also a reflection of us and are part of us, are putting out there. They are warning of food shortages. They are warning of economic downturn and many these kinds of things. You need to get a backup supply of food with your family. I invite you to visit freedomcells.org to connect with the local hives and hubs and pods and cells around you to start building decentralized local activism, to start figuring out how you can grow your own food, to start figuring out how you're going to survive and thrive in the coming years if they say that you can't go to work without a vaccine. Or if they say you can't go into the grocery store without the vaccine, or you can't travel, or you can't fly, all these things are already being discussed. So what is your plan? How are you going to survive if they try to cast us out of society, out of their mainstream world? You know, and on that note, I've seen some people say it's going to be like Demolition Man, where we're living in tunnels under the city, or it's going to be like Brave New World, where we're the savages living on the edge of the city. No, that's all the BS, false dystopian stuff they've tried to feed us. The reality is, we are going to be living in thriving permaculture communities where we're growing our own food. We're living off the grid. We're harvesting rainwater. We're harvesting from the sun. We're trading goods. We're creating our own products and nourishing our bodies. That's what I'm creating. I'm not going to go live in some shanty town on the edge of the city, you know, at all cracked out Mad Max style. Maybe that's what you guys want. Maybe that works for some of you, but I'm trying to thrive. I'm not just trying to survive. But I recognize that this system that they're trying to create, this technocracy that I am learning to opt out and to create freedom from, I can't exist in their world, guys. And maybe it works for some of you, and that's fine. But I don't feel like there's going to be freedom within their realm. I don't think I can live and survive in that. And that's why I'm writing books about that. Recently released book, The Conscious Resistance Trilogy. There you go. And then my Spanish book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. I mean, these are the ideas that I'm putting out there because I am not going to allow myself to be shoved into their society and forced into that. And their plan, as many of you know, is called the Great Reset. And I'm not going to be a victim of the Great Reset. I'm not going to be a victim of Agenda 21. I'm not going to be a victim of COVID-1984. I'm not going to be a victim of any of these situations. I'm going to continue to thrive and survive and work with my brothers and sisters. And as a part of what they're doing, guys, this is, I almost forgot, but I got to mention this story before we get to the very, very important last topic of colonization and decolonization. I promise you're going to hear what I have to say about that. But guys, you might have heard in the recent days that the United States is being hacked by the Russians. Oh, here it is again. You know, we're being hacked by the Russians. No evidence. They haven't presented any evidence. But it relates to, this is a new article I wrote. It's not even published yet. So you guys are hearing this first today on the Conscious Resistance. It'll be published tomorrow, The Last American Vagabond, publicly. But it's about the National Defense Authorization Act 2021. And without getting too deep into this, what I do want to say is that this bill, which is the annual military budget, nobody is talking about the fact that this bill is filled with all kinds of new measures for AI. The Donald Trump administration is promoting the use of AI, and there's nothing wrong with AI. It does lots of beautiful things, but there's also many intelligent people who have warned that if we continue to push forward with AI, it's going to create an arms race, and it could potentially spell the end of a free humanity. And the new National Defense Authorization Act has so much implications for the growth of AI that you need to know about it. But I want to bring you to this point here that I wrote, a cyber pandemic, ? While the media ignores the massive injections of bills related to AI, several prominent voices in Congress are claiming that passing the 2021 NDAA is more important than ever due to the alleged hacking of U.S. governments. In recent days, the corporate media has unquestionably repeated claims that the Russian government hacked U.S. networks using malware embedded in this software called SolarWinds. You guys might have heard this name lately. This is what this is about. So there's a company called SolarWinds, and they work with the U.S. government to manage their some of their systems. And so the government's claiming that somebody installed, basically a virus in SolarWinds, and they got inside the government systems. They're claiming they got in the NSA, et cetera. So now you have Senator Angus King of Maine saying that Trump needs to pass the NDAA because, quote, this is the most important bill on cyber ever passed by Congress. And that's why I'm really hoping that the president will either sign the bill or let it become law without a signature, because there's so much critically important material in the bill. And so as I write here, and I hope you guys are staying with me because this is really important in the bigger picture. This relates to the Great Reset and some of the other exercises that they've run. The timing of this apparent hack is convenient for cyber war hawks who wish to grant the military an unlimited financial resources with which they can develop the AI weapons of the future. These threats are warnings about a coming cyber attack, which have sometimes been called the digital or cyber 9/11, have been happening since at least 2012. The government, the FBI, and the NSA have been attempting to erode protection, privacy protection, and encryption, saying that only terrorists are using encryption, and so we need to get rid of encryption because they don't want you and I to have any layers of protection. Now, what's most interesting about this is that two members of the World Economic Forum have also recently warned that there could be a coming potential cyber attack. Just like the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation were involved in the Event 201 simulation, which simulated a pandemic last October before the COVID-19 happened. The World Economic Forum is also pushing the Great Reset. Coincidentally, two members of the World Economic Forum, their managing director, Jeremy Jurgens, and their chairman, Klaus Schwab, have spoke about this and have warned that we were, having the potential to face a new cyber attack. And guess what? Coincidentally, here we are, and the U.S. government is claiming that, there is a cyber attack going on. And now people are saying, this is Russia. Russia is coming after us. Why isn't Trump doing anything about it? Biden needs to make cyber terror one of his biggest agendas. And it's just feeding in perfectly, guys, into this world of the Great Reset, which is all about a digital panopticon, digital technocracy. And so now they're telling us that there is this terror attack. So you might not have heard about it yet, but I'm asking you to be aware, guys, because as part of some of the simulations that have ran, they have discussed the idea that the power grid could be taken down, that the banks could be manipulated, and this would all be done by cyber terrorists, of course. Don't worry, it's not the NSA, the Israelis, or the US government doing it to themselves, what we call a false flag. No, it's the Russians. Be afraid of the Russians. I don't buy it for 1 minute. And if they provide evidence, then sure, we can maybe go with that. But at this point, they haven't provided any evidence. So I'm going to play you guys a very quick clip. This is from Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum. And this is his warning, or just a few months ago, saying that, you know, this new cyber pandemic could potentially be worse than COVID-19. And coincidentally, here we are, and they're saying that we, the United States, is facing a cyber terror attack. So check this out.
But still, pay insufficient attention to the frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole. The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack. To use the COVID-19 crisis as a timely opportunity to reflect on the lessons the cybersecurity community can draw and improve our preparedness for a potential cyber pandemic.
All right, that was Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, who, of course, is the big promoter of the Great Reset. And if you don't know about the Great Reset, visit theconsciousresistance.com. The very first post you're going to see is a post called The Great Reset, Where Do We Go From Here? And it's a mini documentary that I made. It's only 10 minutes long, and it'll explain the whole thing to you, and it's something that's easy to share with your friends and family. And if you're asking, well, I know about that, Derek. I know that there's this crazy Great Reset thing going on, but what can we do about it? What can we do about it? And what can you do about it, my friends? You can join us for the coming event called The Greater Reset. The Greater Reset is an event that's being organized by myself and some other activists as part of the Freedom Cell Network. It's an initiative of the Freedom Cell Network. And as it says here, this is the world's collective response to the World Economic Forum's initiative. We offer an alternative to their top-down centralized authoritarian vision. We desire to help people find community and liberty by providing practical steps and knowledge for co-creating a world that respects individual liberty, bodily autonomy, and choice. We invite you to join us for 5 days of discussion about the diverse opportunities available for those who seek to live in harmony with humanity, the planet, and while respecting our innate freedom. We're going to have a day all about Agora, the gift economy, barter, crypto, entrepreneurship, counter economics. We're going to talk about the liberating power of technology, encryption, decentralized internet. We're going to talk about healthcare. We're going to talk about parenting and education. We're going to talk about the earth, decentralized environmentalism, permaculture, stewardship of the earth. And on the last day, we're going to talk about community building, intentional communities, freedom cells, and alternative forms of organizing. This is going to feature James Corbett, myself, Rosa Corey. I think we have Kelly Brogan. We have Sire G. We have Lainey Liberty. Jack Spierko, Christian from Ice Age Farmer, and so many other awesome people that we're going to be announcing next week. But guys, please visit greaterreset.net and come over here and sign up for the email list to get plugged in so you can stay tuned when we fully launch this. I'm really excited about it. It's going to be in late January, and I can't wait to just share what we're putting together with you guys. And again, it's going to be 5 days. It'll be online, but we're encouraging everybody to have local watch parties. Get together and get organized and stay together and watch the events, listen to the talks, and try to brainstorm and think about how you guys can organize and can take some of these ideas on. So please, greaterreset.net, greaterreset.net. And now this brings me to the final story of the night as we start to wrap up here on episode 121 of the Conscious Resistance Live. First off, I just want to take a moment to say, guys, can I just celebrate with you guys for a moment? I don't really celebrate that often. I have a problem that sometimes I forget to let myself slow down and celebrate. But look, I'm holding my own books. It's pretty cool. I don't know if you've ever written a book or anything that you're kind of really proud of and happy about, but I got my own copies of my books and I'm holding them in my hands for the first time. These are the fifth and sixth books that I've put out. And these are the first books that I've released with my publisher, Discovery Publisher. And it's really awesome. These are the way that I wanted the books to be when they first came out in 2015, 16, and 17. And now I have a book in Spanish so I can reach even more people and teach them about these ideas. And they're going to eventually get translated to French. So yeah, I just want to take a moment to say, yeah, that's my moment of celebration. All right. So let's talk about colonization, guys. let's talk about what it means to be colonized. So this is something that for me, as an indigenous person, a native person that did not grow up on the reservation, that has a family that's not really connected to our roots. I'm a part of my family is, you know, Mexicans, but we've been here since before Texas or the US. My other side is Seminole, but I don't know anybody from that family. I've had to rediscover my roots. And so as I'm going through this journey, I've really started to learn more about the process of colonization. And, you know, the short version that we all hear is Columbus came to the Americas, you know, somewhere in Central America, and he was representing the Italians. You had the Spanish, you had the Portuguese, you had the Dutch, you had the English, of course, coming through different parts of North America and Central and South America and colonizing. There were already people here that lived. They didn't discover it. They came here. People were already lived. There's lots of battles, of course. There's enslaving of people. Some of the natives sell out their own people to work with the Spanish colonizers or the English colonizers or whatever. And that was in, you know, around 1500. So it's been over 500 years of colonization, several hundred years of slavery in some cases. And then in places in the U.S., you have revolutions in 1776. You've got other places where there's revolutions in Mexico and different parts. You know, all the people started shaking off the shackles and say, we're no longer going to take these empires. And all, you know, a lot of the empires started shrinking. People started fighting wars for independence. And then people have their own civil wars to fight against each other. First, we fight against the colonizers, then we fight against each other. And so it's been a long process, guys, that indigenous people and native people have been colonized. And so 500 years, right, for many people, and that's also Africa for black folks that are originally from Africa that have been colonized. But the process of colonization, it doesn't just look like, look, we're in physical chains. For my experience, you know, my people that I come from, we weren't allowed to grow our hair. They used to cut our hair. They used to change our names. They used to say that it was illegal for us to sing our songs. They would change us. I would be a John Smith. I would be renamed. I would be taken away from my family and put in boarding schools. I'm speaking to the U.S., but also the Aboriginals in Australia had a very similar situation. Plenty of indigenous people in Central and South America have a similar situation. So colonization isn't just physically erasing people or fighting them and killing them and taking their resources, but it's also taking away their traditions. It's taking away their very being, because for us as Native people and as indigenous people, our songs and our prayers and our traditions are everything. That's our connection to our ancestors. And so when you take that away from us, you take away our life in many ways. And so here we are 500 years later, and you have people like me that have no connection to my indigenous past. I don't know much about it. I've had to learn from the Lakota and from the Choctaw, and I'm thankful for every one of my elders and for my teachers that have shown me Sundance and prayer and Sweat Lodge and all of our rituals and traditions that I love and I appreciate so much, and have shown me the connection to the divine, to the creator. But so it's not just about taking away your life. It's about taking away your traditions, your songs. But another important part of this colonization process is it takes away our food waste. So think about this. In the on many Native reservations in most of America, and even through Mexico, not reservations, but just the Mexican people, there are so many people that have diabetes, because in the past, we grew food. We were connected to earth, whether we were hunting buffalo or we were growing corn or we were growing squash or whatever it was. We had our native crops, and we knew, you know, the weeds that many of us in our modern day call the weeds, we knew that those were medicine, you know. And so they have also erased our foodways. So now you have different natives in the U.S. because of the results of colonization, there's a lot of poverty. And because of poverty, there's food deserts. So there's not good, healthy, organic food. And many of us don't grow our own food anymore. So we're disconnected from that. And so then we're eating McDonald's and Coca-Cola and corporate bullshit. And so colonization is also about erasing our diet and about erasing our connection to the earth in general. And in Mexico as well, where I've been, I can see it. I can see the people who are, you see the people who are maybe more European Mexican, and you see people who look more indigenous parts of Mexico. And even in some of the indigenous communities, some people have lost their connection. There's a lot of As one example, there's a lot of younger people in the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma who don't care about tradition anymore, who don't care about singing their songs. They've turned Christian, they've turned Catholic or whatever. The point is that after 500 years, we have been disconnected to the ways that like our birth, where we come from, and that is colonization. So my next part of this message is to my friends who are lighter skinned. I mean, this light's making me look real white, but I'm a little brown. I'm browner, I'm light brown for those who can't see. But for those of you who are maybe lighter complected or you come from European ethnicities, my friends, you're indigenous too. The problem is you've been colonized even longer than those of us who are darker skinned, those of us who come from North America, Central, South America, Africa. Because you have to think about this. Before the colonizers left Europe, before they left Spain, England, Denmark, before they left all the kingdoms and they wanted to go start colonizing, expanding, they colonized their own people. If you think about pre-Christian, because a lot of times, who were the colonizers? The church and the state. The church wanted to convert everybody to their gods, to their beliefs, and sometimes by force, sometimes with violence, sometimes by, like I said, trying to get a local native to convert and help them convert. And then, you know, sometimes it was just done violently. And sometimes maybe tribes were willing to work together and there was actual true collaboration. There wasn't always violence between native peoples and European peoples. But my point here is before the colonizers could leave Europe to go try to colonize the other places, they colonized their own people. And who were those people? Well, we call them pagans. We call them, you know, savages. We call them druids. We call them shamans. These are the teachers, the healers. This is just from Wikipedia, which is not a perfect resource, but in this case, it's helpful. When you look at some of the early religions, early traditions, I don't even know if religion is the right word, but the early spirituality, you have the religions of the ancient Near East, ancient Egyptian religion, ancient Semitic religion, ancient Iranian and Mesopotamian. You have these pre-Christian religions. And I'm not saying that you should believe what they believed or whatever. My point is that there were traditions that existed in the Middle East and in Europe and Eastern Europe prior to Christianity and prior to Catholicism, prior to Islam, prior to Judaism. There were, you know, you can look at, I found this decolonial atlas, European paganism and Christianization, and just kind of showing some of the different groups and the spread of Christianity and the different traditions that existed. What I'm saying is that when we start talking about decolonizing and specifically indigenous decolonization theory, when we start talking about that, what it means is that we learn how long have we been colonized? At what point did our people, wherever you come from, because say you live in America or you live in Mexico or you live in Canada, wherever you're from, right? And you were born and raised there and you have no connection to Italy or to Denmark or Germany, but you have relatives from there, right? Or maybe even if you're living in Germany right now, but we're talking thousands of years ago, it's, you know, it's hard to have connections and to have any understanding of what our people and our ancestors were doing, what they were into, what their beliefs were, what their traditions, what their diets were. I mean, a lot of this stuff really is lost to the pages of history. But the point is, we have an opportunity, and I believe a duty, to reconnect to our ancestors. And that comes, again, with our traditions, with our food, with getting connected to the earth. Because even if you are a Christian and you believe in the Christian God, whatever God you believe in, whatever creator you believe in, the creator created the plants and the animals and the planet and us. And I believe it is our job and that we serve the creator and we honor the divine. The more connected we are to the plants, the more we learn about plant medicine, the more we connect and live in harmony with the planet around us, instead of always using it as a resource where we become the colonizers and we're only taking advantage of. Instead, we actually try to live in harmony. That's what decolonization is about. And there's theories about indigenous decolonization and how it's about trying to look at all the different ways that we might have assimilated certain habits from the people who have attempted to erase us. And so again, I say, whether or not you are light-skinned, dark-skinned, whether you trace your roots back to Europe, here's an interesting article I found called Reclaiming the Indigenous Ethnic Religions of Europe. And this is all interesting to me. I'm not saying that anybody needs to change the religion or believe one way or the other. My point here is that we each, no matter where we trace our origins to on this planet, we each have indigenous roots. So it's not just about darker skinned Native Americans or Mexican natives or mestizos or indigenous people of Ecuador or, you know, the places you some people tend to think of. It's also the indigenous of New Zealand. It's the indigenous of Australia. It's the indigenous of England. It's the indigenous people of Germany, of France, etc. You have roots. They might be lost to the pages of history, but you can find a way to reconnect to that. Because with this system, this sick predator class and the sick predator energy, it's not about the color of your skin. I see so many people, sometimes more left-leaning people, that get caught up. They say it's just the white people, it's white supremacy or whatever. And those are conversations that I think are important. But at the end of the day, a brown person, a black person, an Asian person, a native person can be a colonizer, can be colonized. You can colonize your own people. It's all about the mindset. It's more of a mindset and a spirit that you carry than it is the color of your skin. So each of us have the opportunity in the time we are now to decolonize and unplug from the system, because this system, whether you call it the Western or American or kind of modern worldview, it's the dominant culture. And I've done videos on that before. If anybody's curious about that, you can visit my website and search dominant culture. The dominant culture is fake. It's empty. It's bland. It's processed food. It's genetically engineered, disconnected from Mother Earth, disconnected from the creator. That's what the dominant culture is. It's not something that I believe that many of us really truly want. It's just the garbage, fake, mainstream bullshit that they put up in front of us. And you know what? It's like there's some people that these are the kind of people that they listen to the mainstream music, they watch mainstream movies, they watch mainstream TV, they listen to the mainstream news, and whatever's in front of them, that's all they're going to do. They're not going to think deeper. They're not going to go deeper than that. And that's what this dominant culture is. It's spewing up this sick, twisted world and worldview that only leads to death, and it leads to disconnecting us from our traditions, from our songs, from our prayers, from our foods, from our lifestyles, from the planet, and ultimately from ourselves, guys. These people, the predator class and the predator energy, are trying to dominate our heart and our mind. They're trying to get into our head. As my brother, a huge inspiration, John Trudeau, rest in peace, said, the colonizers, they're not only mining the earth for the resources of the planet and leaving holes in it and emptying it out, but they're mining our minds. This is the most important resource ever, right here, this space in your skull. Everybody is trying to get your attention, is trying to get in that headspace. Right now, I'm trying to get in your head. I've been with you for the last hour, and I appreciate you letting me in there. But you need to be aware that when you turn on the computer, when you turn on the phone, the YouTube ads are trying to get in here. The politicians are trying to get in here. Your friends, your family, everybody is vying for this real estate because this is the most important. And this dominant culture tries to scoop out your origins, your traditions, and your connection to your ancestors that are with you and walk with you every day, and leave it an empty vessel that they can fill up with corporate bullshit, consumerism, you know, insecurities, doubts, fears, all the things that they need to try to control and limit us and manipulate us and get us disconnected from the fact that you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free, and you are capable of doing so much good in this world. Each of us are, if we come together as a beautiful, powerful species, recognizing that, you know what, I don't need to agree with everything you think or say to recognize that you have value and that we can collaborate together. They want us divided. They want us fighting against each other. That is what colonization is about. So whether you are black, brown, white, yellow, purple, whatever part of the planet you were born on, your ancestors were colonized. And we have the opportunity to decolonize, to reconnect to those roots, and to have the respect and the honor for each other to recognize that we've all been through some shit. So when people say it's just the white people, it's just this. No, white people were slaves too. And white people helped black people, and white people helped some natives. And sometimes natives sold their own people out. And sometimes black people sold their own people out. None of our ancestors got out of this clean. The fact of the matter is that some of our ancestors probably enslaved other people, you know, each other, or fought each other. I mean, there's just so much pain and trauma in the human experience. And that's the big thing, is that we have to learn to heal. If we don't choose to be the generations to heal, then my friends, my brothers and sisters, we're going to continue to pass these same problems down to the previous generations. So please, if you've never heard of this, if this is a new concept to you. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is because most of the people that I hear talking about this, they tend to be left wingers. And I don't really consider myself to be a left winger. I'm not a right winger, not a conservative necessarily. I'm an anarchist, really. But I don't want this this conversation to be the simple domain of left wingers or whatever. We all, as I've said, are indigenous. We all have roots that connect to us to this planet. And the sooner we recognize that, the sooner we can heal from the trauma, we can heal ourselves, we can do some healing backwards and help our ancestors. Because everywhere I walk, everything that I do, the beautiful things that I have in my life, the books, all of the positive things that come into my life, it is because I give thanks to the Creator. I give thanks to my ancestors that walk with me. And I give thanks to every single one of you, because I know that we were put here on this planet at this time, in this moment, for a reason. There's never been a more important time or moment than this right now. We have the opportunity to change things around. And I really hope you guys will join me on this. I want to invite you guys to bookmark theconsciousresistance.com. I want to invite you guys to visit greaterreset.net. I want to invite you to visit freedomcells.org. I know I've got a lot of websites, but please make some time this weekend if you can to explore them and get to know them. And yeah, I appreciate the support, guys. I'm headed back to Mexico tomorrow morning. I'll keep you up to date on how things are going out there. You keep me up to date on how you're doing, and let's keep pushing back. Let's keep fighting for truth. Let's build a better world. It's going to take all of us, and I know we can do it, though. So thank you so much for your time, for your patience. Once again, my name is Derek Brose with the Conscious Resistance Network. Go out there, do good things, stand up, raise your voices, make your ancestors proud, and remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
This is Derek Brose. Derek Brose. Derek Brose. This is Derek Brose of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink.
Ah, fucking hell!
We've all stayed alive. You have no idea.